In the weeks leading up to the start of the new millennium, Torontonians were hearing doomsday warnings about the Y2K computer bug that would strike when the clock struck midnight. But when New Year's Eve hit, the city was in a partying mood. Throughout 1999, one of the biggest global news stories was the Y2K bug. Because of the practice of coding computer programs to read two digits instead of four, the fear was that when the year turned over to 2000, the world's digital infrastructure would think it was 1900 and have the digital equivalent of a nervous breakdown. If this code wasn't fixed, there was a possibility computer systems around the world could crash. Digital security consultants predicted extended power outages, food shortages, and a lack of drinking water and proper sewage disposal. Leading up to New Year's Eve, some officials encouraged the public to stock up on food, water, and other essentials. An HP ad for Y2K computer help that ran in the October 8, 1999 edition of the National Post, early tests helped city prepare. A few major tests helped calm the city. On March 6, 1999, Ontario Hydro conducted a major test in central Toronto, where engineers set the internal clocks on its equipment to midnight on New Year's Day. During the test, streetcar and subway service was paused in case vehicles got stuck in tunnels or the middle of intersections. Patrons attending a 1980s dance night at Joker Nightclub on Richmond Street were warned the power might go out, and extra bouncers were hired in case things got out of control. The test was a complete success, with no reports of blackouts or flickering lights. There was a pretty electric feeling, Ontario Hydro spokesperson Alan Manchi told the National Post. We were pretty excited. Preparations continued at other institutions across the city so businesses and government agencies could ensure their computers were compliant. The Toronto District School Board delayed its Christmas break by a week. The TTC planned to suspend service for 5 minutes on either side of midnight. Banks prepared to have thousands of workers ready at their downtown offices or on standby on New Year's Eve. RBC alone booked 300 hotel rooms for its employees. Distress centers and crisis phone lines increased staff, supplies, and service readiness to prepare for an anticipated increase in calls related to anxiety, depression, and suicide threats the new year could provoke. People are really concerned about what the new millennium means for them, a CAMH manager told the Toronto Star at the time. A CompuCentre ad in the March 1, 1999 edition of the National Post, a city prepares for a Y2K night. Torontonians remained cautious in planning their New Year's Eve night out. Price gouging for millennium-themed parties and hotel packages didn't work. Among the planned events that were cancelled were a $500 per plate dinner at the Royal Ontario Museum's J.K. Rom restaurant and a gala ball planned for Maple Leaf Gardens. The King Edward Hotel found no takers for its $15,000 Millennium package, which included a night in its royal suite. When ticket sales appeared sluggish in November, the CN Tower cut the price of its $750 per person, Great Canadian Experience, party in half. Babysitters who took out newspaper ads offering their services for up to $500 per child found few or no takers by the end of November, despite offering perks such as cupcake and pizza parties. My price is not the issue, one babysitter told the Globe and Mail. Parents are wary. They are staying home with their kids. The city's chimney sweeps had the opposite problem. They were overwhelmed with demand from homeowners worried about losing electricity or gas heating. One service alone received 20 calls on December 29 asking if they could make house calls by New Year's Eve, which was all but impossible by that point. While some grocery stores reported runs on water, many just experienced normal last-minute shopping. Toronto police planned to have 75% of the force's officers on duty, while a full complement of firefighters and double the normal volume of paramedics were ready for the worst. Soldiers were on standby at CFB Downsview in case looting and rioting broke out. The January 1, 2000 edition of the Toronto Star. A plethora of parties. as midnight hit in different time zones across the globe and disaster failed to materialize, Torontonians decided to head out for the evening. Those who liked tradition went skating in Nathan Phillips Square. Those seeking a family-friendly, booze-free event headed to first night out at Harbourfront, where the New Year's countdown was led by Ernie, Mr. Dress-Up, Coombs. It's time to start anew and try to be as helpful to each other and as kind as possible, Mr. Dress-Up told attendees. At the venues that didn't cancel their parties, people celebrated. The King Edward Hotel offered a masquerade ball, where the National Post asked an English tourist how they felt about ringing in the New Year in costume. "It's great," they replied. "If we end up falling over later because of too much drinking, at least no one will recognize us in the lobby in the morning." Over at the Four Seasons Hotel, guests drifted through rooms themed after historical periods ranging from the Royal French Court at Versailles to 1970s New York Disco Studio 54 and got to take home a gold-bound scrapbook. For $250 a head, partiers at the Weston Harbor Castle were entertained by rock and roll tribute acts. But for the real thing, people packed a sold-out Air Canada Centre for a concert headlined by the Tragically Hip. The main action was at the foot of Yonge Street, where hundreds of thousands of people viewed the Millennium Lights concert, which opened with live music headlined by Bruce Cockburn, followed by a show that blended fireworks, music and laser lights. It was promoted as the largest fireworks display in Canadian history, with over 100 tons of fireworks used, and the second largest in the world that night behind London, UK. Then Mayor Mel Lastman gushed as he opened the fireworks display. "This is the biggest and best New Year's Eve party in Canadian history," he proclaimed. "Tonight is just a rehearsal for the next millennium, which will be even bigger and better. The new century promises opportunity and untapped potential. Look out, world, here comes Toronto." After a countdown that saw exploding lights scale up the CN Tower, the 17-minute fireworks display began to the tune of Guy Lombardo's version of Auld Lang Syne. It ended with a blast of 750 shells to the strains of Also Sprach Zarathustra, aka the theme from 2001, A Space Odyssey, which left awed spectators holding their hands to their mouths. After the display ended, people wandered north along Yonge Street in a state of good cheer. Police reported few incidents other than the usual examples of New Year's drunken rowdiness. A sigh of relief. Elsewhere downtown, officials working in command centers breathed easy as computer systems functioned normally. The only major hiccup was a break in the Toronto Paramedic System's critical system for monitoring hospitals and redirecting patients. As for those who had stockpiled food in case of catastrophe, a solution appeared for their excess supply. The Daily Bread Food Bank put out a call for donations in early January, which resulted in 13,500 kilograms of food. A positive benefit for all the hysteria that had been raised. Jamie Bradburn is a Toronto-based freelance writer and historian, specializing in tales of the city and beyond. His work has been published by Spacing, the Toronto Star and TVO. Sources: Globe and Mail, March 8, 1999, November 2, 1999, November 27, 1999, December 30, 1999, and January 10, 2000 editions, National Post, March 8, 1999, December 20, 1999, December 28, 1999, and January 1, 2000 editions, Toronto Star, October 22, 1999, December 15, 1999, and January 1, 2000 editions.